morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 223 from Omaha West Side, that is actually in probably more of the center of town, or if you looked at it from a purely centrific way, kind of starting to move into the east way, but they call it West Side still. It is Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha West Side. But before we get to Coach Simons, we of course want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi, 402-964-0300. I went back there a few weeks ago, feeling much better now. Just feeling good, so go see them. Follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to still call it Twitter. Add a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. Go to iTunes. Go to Spotify. Download, rate, review. Give us 5 stars. Write a nice review. When you do that, we move up in the standings. If folks want to find a basketball coaching podcast that helps people, maybe we slide up a couple notches because of that. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coach Simons, how are you doing this fine Saturday morning?
I'm doing well, Marty. No complaints here. It's a beautiful day. Weather's great. And as we were just talking off air, we're getting close to the end of the school year, so all is good in my world.
It's kind of like Columbus at about day 35, 36 of the journey across the Atlantic, and he can see the birds, but he can't see the land yet. That's kind of where we're at as teachers right now.
Yep, we're getting close. We know that it's out there, not too far away, and getting closer each day.
Sorry for the social studies nerd reference, folks, but you've got two social studies nerds here talking. Right, you teach social studies, right, Jim?
I do. Yes. Yeah. So I even knew who Christopher Columbus was. So
I would hope so.
I was all over that one. So
he's this guy with this funny beard named Abraham Lincoln.
I know him too.
Yeah, he's so pretty important. Yeah. For what?
So we're two for two. I knew Abraham Lincoln as well. So your social studies guy's on here.
Oh boy, we are on a roll already. So, Jim, happy to have you on here and excited. Let's just kind of start this here. With your background, your basketball journey, and how you ended up being the boys head coach at Omaha West Side.
Well, it's kind of a unique one, in that this will be the end of my 23rd year in education and coaching, and all 23 of those years have been at West Side. I actually student taught there as well, so it's 23 and a half years. And I initially was maybe more on the baseball side. When I was a first year teacher, I had kind of gone the teaching and coaching route because of some of my baseball experiences. And I was coaching varsity baseball at West Side with Bob Greco, who's one of the most accomplished high school baseball coaches, certainly in Nebraska history and maybe even beyond that. But I also had an interest in basketball. And so my first year teaching, I was hoping to, jump into coaching both basketball and baseball, and was coaching baseball. And there was no positions open on the high school basketball staff. When I came, Dan Schinzel was the head coach and had a pretty experienced staff, but there was an opening at the fifth grade level in the Junior Warriors feeder program. So I took that. And my first 4 years were coaching feeder basketball, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, which at the time, I don't know if I was thrilled about it as a 23-year-old or whatever I would have been at the time, but I think it certainly teaches you how to coach. Had, especially at the fifth grade level, fifth and sixth grade level, I mean, you are really, at that time, it's a little bit different, I think, today with, the advent of select basketball and things like the Omaha Sports Academy and Factory and things like that in Omaha. I think kids are getting started earlier, but back 23 years ago, fifth grade was kind of the first time for, I guess, what you would call serious basketball. I mean, so we were really teaching a lot of base fundamentals. I have no doubt it made me a better coach. Mm-hmm. you know, because you certainly were kind of at the ground level in terms of teaching kids the not only the fundamentals of the game, but team play and, you know, those types of concepts. I mean, trying to teach man-to-man defense was, you know, you're starting from square one. So it was also fairly humbling. You know, one of my favorite stories I like to tell, and I tell it every year when I talk to our feeder coaches, is, you know, that I've been in your shoes. I've done this. In fact, my first game ever coaching, we were playing in the old Predator League at La Vista Junior High. And, you know, we had me and a really good friend of mine, Matt West, who I went to high school with, and Matt played at Creighton for Coach Altman, and he's now a back doctor in town. And we were both 23 and kind of thought we knew everything. And we were ready for the first game. We had all these idealistic ideas of you know, what we were going to do, and we were going to play
the Princeton shuffle with the Tom Davis flex.
We were no doubt the best coach team in that league in our mind. Well, the first game we won the tip. And we probably had eight practices, and we kind of thought, well, everybody's going to teach these kids man. So we'd done a little man offense, and we won the tip, and we dribbled it a couple times across half court, and we saw that the other team was in a zone, which we hadn't talked at all about, and our fifth grade kids didn't know a little screening action, and they didn't know who to screen because there was nobody guarding them. So our first possession was a timeout. that was the start of the coaching career. So I did that for 4 years, and then after that, a position opened up on the West Side staff, and I was the freshman coach, and I loved being the freshman coach. That was back in the days where most all of the freshmen played freshman basketball. Mm-hmm. Very rare that you went up. I mean, if you went up beyond freshman, it was probably because you were a varsity starter. And that was a great experience for a young coach. Dan Schinzel, who's now the athletic director at Creighton Prep, was the head coach. And then shortly into my time on the staff, Dan left to go be the athletic director at Creighton Prep, and Brian Nemechek became the head coach. And it gave me a chance, again, at the freshman level, a focus on fundamentals, a focus on development, teaching kids how to play, how to be part of a team. But at that time, at the freshman level, you ran your own practices. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was doing a lot of the practice planning. Obviously, you coached the games. And it was kind of a, you know, in your own world, you know, kind of a mini varsity team. So it was very good experience. You know, I've often said there's probably a world that exists out there where I might have done it forever. I mean, I really enjoyed coaching freshman basketball and kind of trying to teach kids how to play. And then I decided I wanted to keep doing the basketball stuff, and I applied for another job. I didn't get it. And one of the feedback I got was, well, your only experience was coaching freshman basketball. You haven't coached any varsity athletes. So at that point, I kind of said, okay, if I want to move up in this world, I need to do some other things. And, you know, talked to, at the time, Coach Nemechek, and said, you know, in the past said I'd like to just stay at the freshman, but I think I'd like to move up. And so, you know, I ended up becoming the JV coach at Westside and coaching the JV and varsity, which was also great. It was different than coaching the freshman. You know, the freshman, like I said, it's your own practices. It's kind of your own mini program. Practice in JV varsity together, and as the JV coach, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of the varsity team. That's, you know, certainly the focus. And so I wasn't doing as much practice planning, but I was getting to interact and work with the varsity kids and got experience coaching varsity level athletes. And that was invaluable too. And games were a little different. You got to worry about quarter restrictions for JV kids and stuff like that. But, you know, so all of that was good. And then, so I did that for over a decade. And then, you know, 8 years ago, I was, you know, Brian decided to step down as the coach. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be selected as the head coach. And that's what we've done for the last 7 or 8 years. So, and, you know, for the first 15 years of that, I was coaching basketball and baseball. And then when I became the head basketball coach, and my baseball life came to a close, and it now seems like it was a different lifetime ago. So that's kind of my basketball journey there to becoming the head coach at Westside. So it's been 23 years at Westside, and a lot of different experiences from fifth grade to coaching a Pinnacle Bank Arena at the state tournament.
Yeah. You're an alum of Westside as well, correct?
I am. So yeah, for the better part of, the better part of my life, I've been in the building. It looks a little different now than it did back in the mid-90s when I was a student there. But yeah, I've been there a long time. I guess this is the year 27 if you count
that.
The 4 years as a student there.
So here's my question. Here's probably the thing I'm most curious about, Jim, in this entire podcast. Is there anyone that owns more Westside paraphernalia than you do?
I gotta be up there in the top couple. I mean, there's a couple lifetime Westside people there as well, other employers or people like that. But yeah. I would imagine I'm in the top five. So if anybody needs some Westside gear, I can probably hook you up. I probably got some stuff deep in the closet that hasn't been worn.
Do you ever bust out like just a random, Westside HOCO 97 t-shirt?
Well, I wouldn't. I was a 96 grad.
Okay.
So
that would be awkward.
97,
then.
That would have been one of the 4 years in my life that I haven't been there. So, I don't think I've got much of the stuff from the 90s. I do have some stuff certainly from 10, 15 years ago, and I do get some strange look. I've got one or two baseball, shirts or polos that I'll wear on occasion, and that does confuse some people.
I think you're kind of the Eric Spoelstra of Omaha basketball, because you kind of started out in the equivalent of the film room, coaching, like you said, coaching the lowest level of the feeder teams at the time, and you worked your way up, just kind of continued the grind. But in what ways do you think that has really benefited your program and benefited the building of your program?
Well, I think it helps in a couple ways. One, like I said, I feel that I talk every year to our feeder coaches that haven't done it. We're fortunate enough to have some people who've been really dedicated to our feeder program. They've done it certainly longer than I did it, but I've done it. I've coached at that feeder level, and I know that even at the fifth and sixth grade level, there's that pull to want to win. We're all competitive, and they're keeping score. But I've certainly come to realize as I look back on it 23 years ago that probably much better served if, focusing on teaching those kids the fundamentals and trying to help them improve their skill base, because as important as I thought those fifth and sixth grade games were 22, 23 years ago, I probably now have the benefit of a little additional clarity that there's not a lot of people that remember the results of many of those games 22, 23 years ago that I thought were really important games at the time. But what people do remember is the experience that the kids have and the skills maybe that they gain from the experience, not only on the basketball court, but the other skills of being a part of a team and kind of learning to grow up. So I think it gives me really good perspective in dealing with kind of the youth side of things and dealing with our feeder program, and it made me a better coach. We've had some really talented kids at Westside, and to be quite honest, when I started coaching them, they were really talented kids. We think we've done some things to hopefully expand upon that talent and make them a little bit better, but they were really good players when I got them as a ninth grader or a 10th grader. And to have to, as a coach, learn how to coach the very basics, I think has made me a better coach. So you could probably argue I was, obviously some of the schemes and concepts and scouting are a lot more advanced now that I'm doing than I was doing back then. But some of the base fundamentals, I had to coach those things a lot harder, whether it was coaching, the feeder teams for the 4 years that I did, or even coaching ninth grade basketball. Just the attention to detail and the focus on base fundamentals, for probably the first 7-8 years of my coaching career, I had to really learn how to coach those things. And I think it's helped me. As the players I coach now are much better than those kids were back then. But just having that base, I think, is something that's been very helpful for me.
Sure. You took over, and it was kind of a rebuild. In the sense of, from the wins and losses perspective, the year before you took over, you were 6-17. Now, obviously, Jim, you're much more familiar the reasons for that. My question is, as you took over and you're taking over a situation where you'd only had 6 wins the year before, what were some of the things that you thought needed to be addressed to kind of get things going in the direction that everybody wants to get it going at? You know, what are the 2 or 3 things that you really focused in on as the head coach and built that out through your coaching staff that, hey, you know, what do we need to do to get this going in the direction we'd all like to get it going to?
Yeah, you're right. I think sometimes people forget that. I mean, the year before, I took over, we were a 6-win team, and that year in the Metro Conference Holiday Tournament, the annual conference tournament we have, there were 16 teams that year in the Metro Conference, and we were the 16th seed. I think people nowadays kind of have forgotten a little bit of that. And now I will say that's a little bit maybe misleading. In 2014, we lost the state championship game in overtime. Sure. We had success that last year before I took over was just kind of a confluence of events that some of them within our control, some of them probably outside of our control, that a season just really, really spiraled. But it had been, when I took over, you know, a couple of years since we'd had a winning season, and you know, certainly we were a few years removed from the state championship game. The biggest thing that I thought, I mean, we identified a couple things that was a key part of the process of trying to get the job was, number one, the player experience. We'd had a couple of transfers out of the program, and with the open enrollment that does define Class A basketball and really Class A schools in Nebraska. I mean, it is, I know there's a lot of discussion, and we could probably go on a very long podcast with the different opinions that people have on that. But at the end of the day, it's a state law, the option of enrollment. And I think you either have to accept the fact that it is the law in the state of Nebraska. And certainly when something comes down from the state legislature, they're not very concerned about what a basketball coach thinks. So, and we had had.
Which I hardly think that's fair, by the way.
Well, that probably depends on maybe your political leanings and stuff like that. But yeah, we had some kids who were talented kids leave the program. And, at the end of the day, talented kids certainly make coaching a lot easier. They make winning basketball games a lot easier. So we had to find a way, I think, to improve the player experience in the program. So those kids that we did get into the program weren't looking to leave. I thought that was number one. Number two, my opinion, every program has different strengths and weaknesses. I thought our attention to detail in terms of player development could be better in terms of the fundamentals. And maybe that was just, some of my experiences like that we talked about at the lower levels. I thought we had to find a way to try to compete in Class A. And one of the things we did is, we really dove into skill building, specifically shot making, really trying to find a way to leverage the 3-point shot. We haven't been blessed with a ton of size, but find a way to, leverage that 3-point shot and give ourselves an opportunity. And, so those were, to me, the player experience. And, culture is kind of a buzzword that gets thrown out a lot, but if you want to throw that in there, I thought that was, priority one. And then priority maybe 1B was trying to improve our skill and being more consistent in what our offseason looked like. And then, to be honest, and I knew this when I took over, we had good young kids. We had a good group of sophomores that were in the building that was a really good foundation for what we were trying to do. And we had a couple really good 8th graders at our middle school that I knew. My first year, we had to show some improvement because, that old option enrollment thing. Yeah. There were some other people who knew we had a couple good 8th graders too.
Stunning, that, really?
Yeah, so I thought it was really key that we took advantage of the fact that we had some good sophomores, some talented sophomores, and if we could put something together that first season, then hopefully those 8th graders would stay in our district and give us a chance. And then, you know, luckily we showed some improvement the first year. Those eighth graders came. Two of those kids were in our top six their ninth grade year, and those sophomores became juniors. And, you know, we had some success that second year and were able to make the state tournament. And, you know, and since then we've kind of got things going in a positive direction. So I think those were all key things that we identified early on as, you know, ways to try to get things turned around.
Coaches, it is official. October 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday, October 12th and 13th, 2024, will be our first annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Retreat. It is going to be over 24 hours of just basketball coaching and getting yourself primed and ready for the upcoming season. We're going to do a lot of different things. Coach Flannery and the staff at Creighton University have been gracious enough to allow us to come in and watch them practice that day. We're going to have roundtable sessions with coaches that you're attending the clinic with, which is one of the best aspects of any A Pen and a Napkin event. We're going to have a full timeout situation score group discussion with the coaches that are attending, as well as coaches social, and then, of course, guest speakers. We got some great coaches lined up right now. We're probably going to be adding a couple of more here. It is going to be a great, great weekend here in Omaha. We'll be staying at the Holiday Inn Express at 87th and West Dodge Road here in Omaha, and it is really, really affordable. $200 for the weekend, and that includes food, that includes your lodging at the hotel, drinks, everything that goes into it. It is going to be included in that $200 for well over 24 hours worth of activities. If you're a commuter, if you're living in the Omaha area and you want to join in, but you don't want to stay at the hotel, it's $125. Think of that. That's literally what, $5-6 an hour for an entire weekend of becoming a better coach. So coaches, I encourage you to sign up as soon as you can for the first annual A Pen and a Napkin Fall Coaches Retreat. What, you know, you've also, before you became the head coach, you were also really active with the AAU. You did a lot of stuff at what we just call an Omaha OSA or the Omaha Sports Academy. And you did some high-level coaching there with that organization. What were some ways in which getting those reps at that high level, as at the OSA level, as an AAU coach, how did that help you in your development to help prepare you to take your own program?
Well, I thought it was absolutely critical for my development as a coach. And, you know, it was back in a day and age when the OSA Crusaders, or it was initially the Omaha Crusaders, and then the two groups merged to form the OSA Crusaders, was really a collection of high school coaches that were, you know, continuing to coach in the AAU season. And number one, I was surrounded and got to work with and got to learn from some really, really good coaches. You know, Doug Woodard ran the organization, and Doug, you know, who I know has been on the pod, as retired last year, is one of, if not the most accomplished basketball coaches in Nebraska state history. And, you know, along with Doug, I mean, they had guys like, you know, your buddy Tom Crable, who's been very successful at Boys Town.
He's probably more your buddy than my buddy. Yeah. Let's just get that clear. Right. No, we're just kidding,
you're
Tom.
You're not claiming him, huh?
Yeah, you know. I'm not sure who's really claiming him, but anyway.
Well, that's probably fair. you know, Joel Heiser at Papio South, Jason Ryan, who's now the principal at Papillion, but was a very successful head coach both at Bellevue East and Papillion. So not only was I working with those people and, you know, but you're learning from them all the time. You know, Doug is probably as good of a mentor as I have, especially when I became the head coach. But that was the first thing I think I gained from it, is I was coaching with, whether it was on the same team or maybe I was coaching one age group and, you know, Doug and Joel were coaching another age group, you know, coaching with and surrounded by those people. And we spent so much time on the road in those summers, which, you know, you've done it as well on the girls' side, just hanging out at the hotel or hanging out at the gym and talking basketball. And it opened my eyes to, you know, and we talked earlier, I mean, I spent my entire career at Westside. That really opened my eyes to what other people do. And not that, you know, everything they did I thought would be a fit at Westside, but it gave me such a broader scope, you know, of information to draw from. Of this is how Bellevue West does these things. This is how Jason Ryan at Papillion and Bellevue East did these things. This is how, you know, Tom Crable has done these things. And so I thought that was really valuable. And then the second thing is it gave me live reps. I was fortunate enough that those guys believed in me as a JV coach / varsity assistant to coach, you know, some of the top teams. And you know, that experience in coaching high level players and competitive high level games was really invaluable, you know, because I love my experience coaching at the freshman and the JV level. But let's call it what it is, the pace of play, the skill and the talent of both the players you're coaching and the opponents is not, you know, what it is when, you know, I'm coaching against Bellevue West or Millard North right now. Yeah. And so that experience of coaching those players in high level games that were fast, athletic, quick paced games, and then also you know, coaching the ego of a lot of high end players, you know, coaching the kid who's maybe his basketball career is going to end as a freshman player at Westside. It's maybe a little bit different than, you know, when I coached Teddy Allen, you know, or say, you know, who was going to go on and play a Power Five basketball. And so I thought from both a coaching perspective of learning what other really successful coaches are doing, along with, you know, getting those game reps of coaching and getting an opportunity to coach varsity / Division One, Division Two, NAIA level players was really critical. It's one thing I've always told younger coaches. I think it's the best thing I did. That was, in my mind, it was, you know, kind of it was a big investment of time, but it was the best coaching clinic or coaching school I ever could have done. And I don't think, I don't know that I would have the job that I have today had I not done it, because it was certainly something that, because when I got the Westside job, I was going against a couple of finalists who had head coaching experience and successful head coaching experience. And I think what that helped me as somebody who hadn't been a head coach, of having shown an ability to, you know, run my own team, albeit on the AAU level, and coach those high level players. You know, A, I don't know if I would have gotten the job, and B, I know I would not have been as prepared. So it's something when I talk to younger coaches that I always say, you know, if you have an opportunity to do this, especially if you can be around good coaches and good players, do it. Invest in yourself. It is a time commitment, but you know, it's one of the best things I think you can do in trying to improve yourself as a coach.
You also said, you know, you were a baseball guy. You coached, you know, for 15 years with Bob Greco. Just and obviously two completely different sports with the pace and everything. But there's just like with anything, there's crossover. And what are some things that you took from Bob and from your baseball experiences that have helped develop your program?
Well, we like to joke, Bob had two daughters who were basketball players, and Bob would tell you, and he would certainly tell his daughters, that Bob knew just as much about basketball as he did about baseball. And Bob's daughters and me would say that's categorically false. Bob was a much, much better baseball mind than basketball mind, but that didn't stop him from giving his daughters a lot of suggestions and me some suggestions as well. But you know, Bob, you know, for the listeners probably outside of the basketball world that aren't as familiar with him, I mean, Bob, you know, won 7 state championships and is in several Hall of Fames already, and probably the ones he's not in is he's on the way to. And so the sport crossover was almost none. And in fact, you know, his daughters and I would joke I would probably be better off not listening to any of his basketball advice. But I really learned how to coach and how to run a program under Bob, you know, and you know, just the way in which he was very intentional about building his program. Bob spent a lot of time on the mental game, which I think is something that sometimes people overlook, myself included, and we've certainly tried to take some of that, that I learned from Bob, and the emphasis on the mental game and how important that is. You know, I think I've heard somebody describe it once, and it's pretty accurate. Is, you know, put yourself at the free throw line, up 30 points with 3.5 minutes to go, shooting two free throws, and then put yourself at the free throw line down one with 1 second to go, shooting, you know, in the old days a 1-1, but now you're shooting two. And how much of that free throw, the difference in those two free throws is physical, and how much is mental? Well, I think most of us would say that's mental, right? You know, the difference in those two scenarios. And Bob was just huge on the mental game, and knowing that his teams were going to be in the mix more years than they were not, and that those games were going to come down to a couple pitches, a couple at-bats, and in the late innings, he really leaned into that. And I think that's something we've tried to take, and even just some little things, like Bob had a rule for his coaches in the last couple weeks of the season that he just would not allow any negativity. If there were corrections to be made, they had to be done positively. He just felt when you got to those last couple weeks, district and state play, it was just incumbent upon the coaches to be very positive. And that kind of our time to have been negative or to really kind of come down on kids was had come and gone. And we've tried to really, do that. I mean, my coaches today will hear me say that, like, it's too late in the season to be negative. We just have to be really positive with the kids and pump them up with a lot of positive energy. And, we had our time maybe in December and January. So, that's something that, I've tried to take. And then, probably the last thing that kind of goes along with all of it is I thought Bob's teams were always at their best when it mattered the most. And he was just constantly, he talked all year long about what the end goal was. And sometimes people shy away from that. Bob never did about talking about, what the goal was, which in the baseball program that he ran was to play in the state championship game. And he always talked about that and, what didn't shy away from it. And always asked the kids to visualize that. And so, we tried to take, like I said, some of those things that maybe are not basketball or baseball sports specific, but are just specific to trying to build a winning program, a program that expects to win and expects to compete at the high level. And, he's just been a really good resource, in that way. I try to ignore his shooting tips or, his out of bounds plays or things like that. They maybe were a little bit more helpful for me when I was coaching at the fifth and sixth grade level than now. But just, I'm really fortunate between him and when we talked a little bit about the Crusader stuff, to be able to consider Bob and Doug Woodard, in their two respective sports, maybe as successful as anyone who's done it. And certainly in Nebraska in the last 30 years, to be able to consider them both mentors and friends has really helped me.
You're getting closer to that ultimate goal. Tough semifinal loss this year. Sorry to bring up something that still might be eating at you a little bit, but what's kind of the next thing? What do you feel like you can control as the head coach at Omaha Westside to take that final step, get into that state championship game, and then hang a banner of your own in the Westside gym?
No, you're right. I mean, it's been kind of the one, the last frontier, I guess, for us to get to. In the last 5 years, we've been in the semifinals 3 out of the last 5 years, and been in the state tournament 4 out of the last 5 years. I think we finished in all 4 of those years in the final top 4, top 5, in the statewide rankings. So, one, it's been hard for anybody, right? Those 5 years coincide with, there's been 2 teams, Bellevue West and Millard North.
They've been pretty salty.
They've been pretty good, and they've been in the state final, which is really just incredible. Think about that. Those 2 teams have played each other 5 years in a row in the state finals. And 2 of those 5 years, we've lost to Bellevue West in the semifinals. And then, as you mentioned, this year we lost to Millard North in overtime in the semifinals. So, and then the 4th year we lost to Creighton Prep in the state tournament, who probably before the last 5 years was, you know, right there at the top, you know, of winning and competing for championships as much as anybody. So, you know, we feel good that, you know, we're certainly, we've been a consistent state tournament team. We've been a team that when we've gotten to the state tournament, and, you know, we've been able to beat most of the people in front of us other than the two that have been at the top. And, you know, so we think we're doing a lot of good things. We're always trying to figure out, you know, can we get an edge here or there? And, you know, you mentioned this year, we were very close and we lost by two in overtime. And, you know, as any coach listening probably understands, that there's a million different things that continue to eat at me, for whether they're substitution decisions or out of bounds calls that we, you know, that we called, you know, there's a million different things in a 2-point game that, that eat at you. But at the end of the day, that night, I mean, our kids and Miller North's kids played as hard as they could possibly play. It was an kind of an ugly slugfest of two teams that knew each other really well and both competed really hard. And we didn't finish at the rim as well as we would have liked to have, and maybe as well as we had at other points in the year, but Miller North's defense and athleticism had a big part to do in that. And, you know, they just made one more play than we did at the end. And, you know, so our goal is to, you know, continue to do the things to be in position that we've done over the last 5 or 6 years. And we feel good about, you know, kind of that process, and then try to learn each year we go down there in terms of, you know, can we handle certain aspects of the state tournament better? You know, can we find a way, you know, this year, you know, to be a basket or two better? I think it comes down to, obviously, you got to have good players, and we've been fortunate enough to have good players. And then when you get there, you got to have maybe good matchups and, you know, maybe a bounce or two go your way. And, you know, quite honestly, the first two times we were in the state semis, we got beat by Bellevue West, and that wasn't about a ball bouncing our way. I mean, they beat us pretty soundly in both semifinals. And, in both years, they went on to win the state championship, and they were just better than we were on that day. You know, and 2 years ago, they, you know, it was a team that was undefeated. They were better than everybody on every day.
It's pretty, you know, pretty good way to end it for Doug there. So
That was, and that, you know, the biggest mistake we made that year was, you know, I mean, they blew everybody out other than we played in the last game of the regular season, and the game went to overtime. It was the only game they had in single digits all year, and we had a shot at the buzzer to win. We were down two and at the end of overtime, and decided to go for a three, and kind of thought, well, I'm playing four more minutes against a team that's 23-0, it, you know, just the longer the game goes, it probably favors them. And we had a great look by a great player, and we missed it. And that was the worst thing we could have done was, you know, when we played them then a couple weeks later in that state semifinal game, we certainly had a much more focused version of that Bellevue West team that night. And that game did not go as well for the Warriors and was not as competitive. You know, but yeah, I just think, you know, I don't know if there's any one thing that, you know, I would identify. I mean, obviously there's some things those programs are doing a little bit better than we are. And, you know, 'cause they kind of keep getting over that hump that we keep stopping at, but, you know, we think if we keep knocking down the door and keep working hard and keep being lucky enough to have good players and put them in the right positions, that, you know, one of these years, somebody else is going to have to be in the finals, right? Bellevue West or Miller North. I don't know that it can.
Law of averages would state that should happen at some point.
At some point. But, I don't know if I'd say there's one specific, you know, one specific thing, but, you know, I think just keep trying to put ourselves in a position and keep knocking on the door, and then get there and make a couple plays and knock through the door and see what happens. But I think some of the things we talked about earlier, you know, the mental game is huge in those games. And I think both Bellevue West and Miller North kids play with a ton of confidence down there. And why shouldn't they? They've, you know, one's won it three times in 5 years and the other's won it twice. And, you know, I think we have to continue finding ways to evolve in our mental preparation, especially when you play one of those two teams down there. Because, you know, our players and everybody else involved knows it as well as I do, that, you know, outside of themselves, nobody's beaten either one of those two in the state tournament in the last 5 years. So, you know, I think that's that's critical. And, I think our kids certainly believe this year that they could win, but just continuing to foster that belief and to work that mental aspect of things. Because, hey, if you're going to get yourself into a state championship game, you're going to have to win games that come down to the wire that, involve making some clutch plays late, free throws, those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. All right, Jim, you know it is time for the John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Simons, are you ready for the Wooden quote of the day here? From, I got to find it here, page 192 from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "Success is not perfection. You can never attain perfection as I understand it. Nevertheless, it is the goal. Success is giving 100% of your effort, body, mind, and soul to the struggle. That you can attain, that is success."
That Wooden guy knew a thing or two about basketball and coaching, things like that. So, I listened to enough of these to know that's kind of a common refrain from people is, all of these quotes seem to have some correlation to what we all have going on. And, to me, it's a perfect quote. We've talked to a couple of our returning guys this spring about basketball is a fast-paced, imperfect game. I mean, you watch Steph Curry miss his shots, LeBron turns it over, and we've got a couple younger guys in our program right now that just get very down on themselves after a couple of mistakes, which in their younger kids, freshmen and sophomore kids. And I was talking, we have kind of an end of year meeting with each kid, where we, as most people probably do, we kind of review what they did well and then kind of some action steps going forward. And, one of the kids kind of kept asking me, what do I need to work on? And I kept going back to the biggest thing you got to work on is your resiliency, because you're a very talented player. You do a lot of really good things when your mind is right. But then it seems you get knocked back, a thing or two happens in the game. Yeah. And he's a young kid, 15 years old, but you get knocked back and it takes you sometimes a couple possessions, sometimes a half, sometimes it doesn't happen in that game, to kind of get yourself off the mat and be resilient. And we kind of talked about having a mistake response system and being able to understand, you missed an open shot, but so did Steph Curry, last night or, whenever he last played. And, you might have missed a defensive rotation, but I watched the Knicks and the Pacers last night, and some of those guys missed defensive rotation. So I think getting kids to understand that basketball is such a fast-paced game. There's so many possessions. There's going to be a number of mistakes in the game, and being resilient enough to get to the next play. We talk a ton in our program about next play mentality. Yeah. And to me, and you hope, I know most of us, if not all of us who do this, hope that the skills we teach in basketball are tangible life skills, right? I mean, it's not just trying to teach a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid how to dribble and shoot a basketball. I mean, if that's all you're trying to do, it's a little hollow. Yeah, it's a little hollow. You know, it's that these are tangible life skills. And to me, then that quote, you know, encapsulates what we talk about in our program as next play mentality, which is a Coach K thing. I mean, yep. Certainly not smart enough to come up with that on my own, but
neither was I. Yeah, that's the one we use too. Good play, next play, bad play, next play,
or NBA next best action, which I know is a Don Meyer thing. And I know you're a Don Meyer guy, so those things all are kind of each of those guys in their own way saying essentially the same thing. And, mm-hmm. and we're constantly talking to our guys about, the team that can be the most resilient, especially when talent's relatively equal. I mean, obviously if there's an imbalance in talent in a game, and maybe it's not as important, but when talent is relatively equal in a fast paced game of mistakes, the team that can be the most resilient and the player that can be the most resilient and get to that next player, that next best action, has the best chance of being successful. I think that's what Coach Wooden's talking about there, is getting kids to understand, success isn't, going 10 for 10 from the field and 8 for 8 from the line and not turning it over. You're going to be pretty successful if you do that, but you're not going to have that day very often. If you only view yourself as being successful on those days, then, you're going to be fighting the mental battles a lot. So just getting kids to accept that perfection is not how you define success. And mm-hmm. I think a very timely quote, and one that, like I said, and a couple of our younger guys, we're going to work on that a lot in June when we're with our team, because there are a couple guys that are very talented players, and if they can become a little bit more resilient, then we like what they can bring to us.
Well, you did an excellent job with the Mike Greenberg segue there, Jim, with our next topic and talking about the summer season. And I really like, and you talked a little bit about this at the clinic a couple weeks ago, but you divide up the season or the calendar into basically three segments. So tell us a little bit about that, your philosophy with that, how you explain it to your kids, what you're emphasizing as a coaching staff, just all the stuff that goes into it and how you've put that together.
Yeah, well, it was, we talked earlier about when I took over the program, and one of the things that we thought we really had to emphasize was to have a really strong offseason. I mean, Class A Metro Conference basketball in Nebraska the last decade has been so competitive that if you are not having a successful offseason, the chances of having a successful season in the winter is very small. And I just thought that was really, really critical. It's one of the first things, I've talked about kind of Doug Woodard as a mentor, that I did when in preparation for the job. We've had a lot of conversations about this during the days coaching Crusaders, but when I actually got the job, was sit down with Doug and what exactly do you guys do at Bellevue West? And we don't do everything the same as what Bellevue West does. I mean,
you got to put your own twist on it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, one of the things that I got from Doug was this idea of, you have kind of three distinct parts of your off season. One is kind of the spring season that we're all just wrapping up right now. The second one would be the summer, the June and July segment. And then the third would be obviously the preseason once you get back into school, maybe late August, up through early November. And obviously, you probably have many different listeners from different states, and different states have different rules, contact days, all those types of things. But in Nebraska, what we've done, what we found that works is the season ends. You hope it ends in mid March at the state tournament, which we've been fortunate enough the last few years that it has. And we don't do anything basketball wise with them for a month. I always tell in kind of our last team meeting, our return, I said, you're not going to hear much from me over the next month. It's not because I'm mad or angry or upset with you or whatever. It's we've just spent a lot of time together. We put a lot of work into the year that just finished. You need some time away from me And I honestly, you know, as you know, you need a little bit of time yourself away from kind of the rigors of the season and the team and
decompression
kind of
stuff.
You know, and get back into your family and to, you know, focus on some things beyond basketball. So that's been really good for us just to take that month. It also coincides within Nebraska right after the state tournament is when the AAU season starts. So it allows them to focus on their tryouts, getting with their AAU team, getting off to a good start with their AAU team, kind of leaning into, you know, whatever it may be that those AAU teams are trying to get them to do conceptually and also practice-wise and stuff like that. So we just felt, take that month, let them decompress, let the coaches decompress, let them jump into the AAU stuff. Obviously, if you've got some kids who are spring sport athletes, they're going to then, you know, spend that time focusing on that. And then our spring is kind of our lightest period. So we'll come back usually the middle of April, and we'll go for 6 weeks, and all we do in those 6 weeks is we shoot. We bring our guys in twice a week. In Nebraska, it's during the school year out of season, it's four at a time. So we've got groups of four of returning varsity guys and then obviously prospective varsity guys, and fortunate enough to have a good coaching staff and guys that are willing to help. And so we're going twice a week for about 45 minutes each time. And we're just getting a bunch of shots up. You know, as I spoke about at the clinic, everything we do shooting wise is timed and scored and competitive. So we're kind of establishing what we call our shooting ladder in the spring. It's not overly hard, but you know, most of our kids in the spring are either involved in a spring sport or they're playing AAU. And if they're playing AAU, they're playing 3, 4, 5 games on the weekends with a practice or two thrown in there. You know, they don't need, you know, any sort of overly strenuous workout from us. They're getting to play quite a bit with their AAU team. So we're going to shoot for about 45 minutes twice a week. We've got a group, for example, that goes Monday and Wednesdays before school that Derek Porter, one of my assistants, runs. He's a little bit more of a morning person than Coach Simons is. So, you know, and
you need that.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, then we've got some groups that'll go after school. So that's the shooting part. And then the second thing we do is we do continue to lift. We're fortunate enough at Westside that almost all of our basketball players are in either our what we call sports performance, which is kind of our athletic weights class. And all of our kids who are varsity players this year are in that. And then some of the younger kids, most of them are in a strength and conditioning class also. So they're able to do that during the school day. So we aren't doing a team organized lift at this time of year. So that, you know, that gives them, you know, that time after school for their AAU or just go be a kid. And we do that for 6 weeks. We'll end that next week. And then the last week of school, we don't do anything. We let them focus on their finals and getting their grades right and all those types of things. And then that's our spring season. And it's 6 weeks, and it's not overly intensive, but it's lifting and it's shooting. We get into our summer season the Tuesday after Memorial Day. We're out of school. That also coincides with the NSAA rules change. That day after Memorial Day is into the summer period. And the first week, we'll have what we call our team install camp. It'll be 3 days. It's
glorified practice in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it's, you know, it's install, and it's our install camp. And we're trying to put in all of our offensive and defensive concepts. There's a lot of continuity from the previous years. So a lot of it is just, you know, kids have been away from us for a couple of months now. They've been playing for various AAU teams, or they've been running track or playing baseball. And it's just kind of getting them reacclimated to conceptually what we're trying to do offensively and defensively. And then each year, you know, you tweak a few things. We'll be a little different this coming year than we have been the last few years, and that we lost some you know, a couple of very good lead guards that have played for us. And, you know, so we're going to conceptually make a couple tweaks offensively. So get those introduced and spend that week doing that, that last week of May. Then we get into June and July. And that's when we just get into our summer routine. And our summer routine is we go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 1 hour on the court with kind of skills and concepts. And then about an hour, a little less in the weight room. We do more of an in-season kind of lifting program in the summer because they are playing a lot of games. And we've got a pretty good arrangement. If they're football, basketball guys, football program has been amazingly successful. Those guys will lift with football because football is the next sport, but they'll do the skills part with us. So they kind of finish their football stuff up, and then we do skills first when football ends. And then after we're done with skills, those guys who aren't playing football, we go to the weight room for our basketball weights. So that allows our football guys, to also be included in the skill part, which is really important for us with how we play. And then we'll play, once a week. We've got, we call it the Monday Night Varsity League, that we'll play in throughout June. And then I usually try to play in one, whether it's a team camp or three-game tournament, later in the week on a Thursday or Friday. So we're hitting kind of two competitions, one at the start of the week, one towards the end of the week. And then as often as we can, we give them Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. The only thing we're ever doing on a Friday or a Saturday is if we happen that week to be in a team camp or a tournament that is set on a Friday. And then I think the only time we go on a Saturday is we are going to Kansas City for the Midwest Showcase put on by the Missouri Basketball Coaches Association, and that's a weekend event. But outside of that, we want to give them their weekends off. It is hard to be a kid, like maybe, for those of us who grew up in 70s and 80s and 90s, envision being a kid, because there just wasn't all of this opportunities. But I do want to give them a couple days a week where they can enjoy their summer, enjoy their friends. So we do that for June. We take a week off at the 4th of July. Again, communicate with the parents. That's a great time if you're looking to get away as a family. We're not going to do anything for like 9 days over the 4th of July week. And then when we come back in July, we're lighter in July because we're cognizant of two things. One, our guys that are football, basketball players, football kind of really starts to ramp up with their camps and their activities in July. And two, a lot of our kids, are playing AAU. And we in Nebraska, I know sometimes on the girls' side, this hasn't been as clean. And I know in other states it hasn't been, but we're really fortunate. The AAU programs and coaches and directors work incredibly well with the high school coaches. And June is kind of the high school month. July is the AAU month. So we don't play any competitions, no team camps, no live play. In July, that time is for them to play with their AAU. We go Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and we just go for 90 minutes, about a 45-minute lift and about a 45-minute skills. And the focus on the skills in July really becomes more just shooting and ball handling, a lot less conceptual-based, and just kind of skills that are going to help them as they play in July, and also try to be mindful of taking it easy on their bodies. We don't go on Mondays because most of them are playing AAU. They've got a very full weekend of, you could argue, maybe too many games over the weekend, but a very full weekend of games. And then we don't go on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays because they're playing AAU. So we take that through July, and then we're off in August. And then those guys who are not playing football or in the other various fall sports, we get back together, around the Labor Day period in early September. And we do have a fairly extensive kind of weights program after school for about 12 weeks, September, October, and late last week or two of August, September and October, and maybe the first week in November, where that's where we lift probably the hardest all year, because it's the kids who aren't playing football and they are truly out of season at that point in time. They're not doing AAU either. So we are pretty heavy on our lifting at that point in time in the year. And we also are twice a week with our skill workouts, similar to the spring, but we're maybe a little bit more conceptual based in our four-man groups because getting closer to the season. And then we'll have open gyms and play in a Saturday morning varsity league here around Omaha. It's been good for us. I mean, like you said, everybody's a little bit different. Our kids kind of have an idea of what the spring looks like, what the summer looks like, and what the fall looks like. And whether they agree with it or not, I kind of go over our rationale for why we are, a little bit more intense at certain points in the off season and a little bit less intense at other points in the off season. And at the same time, you're mindful of the kids who are playing multiple sports. We don't have a ton. We're a large Class A school. I think more and more, whether that's good or bad, is
more specialization.
Yeah, we do. I mean, but we also had a kid, you know, like Caleb Benning. I mean, Caleb was a 4-year varsity basketball player for us. He started as a freshman and, you know, was invaluable to us the last 4 years. And Caleb is going to play football at Nebraska and was an all-state football player, you know. And so Caleb is a prime example of if you're willing to put the work in. And Caleb is an unbelievably mature kid, and he's really good at managing his time. And he, obviously we knew from, you know, very early on that that football was probably where he was destined to play after high school. He was you know, high major football recruit by not just Nebraska but several other schools. But you know, so we're going to adjust and be reasonable for those kids that are playing football or playing baseball or you know, running track. And so if those kids, you know, aren't with us, you know, it's like I always tell them, I mean, it's one thing if your teammates are working in the gym in the summer and, you know, you're at the pool all summer, it's kind of hard to maybe gain your teammates' respect. But if they know you're not lifting with us in the summer because you're lifting with football, they kids understand that. And, sure, you know, I mean, it can work. And I think sometimes kids don't believe it can work. You know, Caleb is an example. If you can kind of manage time and are committed to being a multi-sport athlete, you don't have to be at everything in the off season for both sports. As long as you're working hard in one of those two things, it'll probably work out for you.
Uh-huh. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Let's talk about your practices, Jim. Let's talk about how you guys put together your practices and how you, just how you schedule it, why you do what you do, when you do it, all of those different things, and just tell us how you to do that at Westside.
I think that's probably, Marty, one of my biggest evolutions as a coach, maybe over the last 5 years or so. We used to do a ton of 5-on-0 stuff, a ton. And in fact, if you would ask some of the guys that played for me in 18, 19, 20, they would, and they have told me that at times our practices were too long and they were boring. It was probably on me. You know, we just, not that the stuff we were doing 5-on-0 was bad, but we did a ton of that, or, you know, we did a ton of on-air stuff that took a lot of time. And you know, like I think a lot of us, we got beat in the state semifinals in front of, you know, about 50 people in March of 2020, you know, as COVID hit. And then, you know, we played that semifinal game. I think it was one of the last, you know, competitive events in the United States. I mean, the game was on SportsCenter because it was one of the last things still playing. But, you know, when that got over, myself, like a lot of other people, you had a lot of time to think and self-reflect, because well, there wasn't a whole lot else that you could do for, you know, a couple of months there. And we had always done kind of an exit survey, an end of season survey, you know, with our guys, especially our seniors. I mean, I think obviously your returning players sometimes are a little hesitant to be 100% transparent, honest with you, because they, you know, there's always a wonder of, okay, how's he going to take this? But I think your seniors are, you know, at that point, they, you know, they I think they're very willing to be very transparent with you. And, you know, because most of the time those kids, they want to help the program. They want to see the program continue to succeed. So, and that was some of the feedback we got. And, you know, a lot of years, you're kind of just on to the next thing, right? I mean, you get that feedback, the season ends, and you're moving on to your spring programming and stuff like that. Well, that year, there was nothing to move on to for several weeks to several months. And so I really poured into some of that feedback, and I kind of, whether it was phone call or text, had some extended conversations with those seniors, because again, there wasn't much else to do. And one of the things that came out was practices are too long. They're not too strenuous. They're just too long. And do we really need all the 5-on-0 stuff? And so, you know, what we've done since then is we've tried to shorten our practices. Like everybody, I've always heard that, you know, I mean, anytime, whether it's a pen and a napkin or any other coaching podcast, you hear good coaches talk about that. But, you know, and I knew that, but I would just get into practice planning and, well, this is really important. We got to do this. We got to do this. And all of a sudden,
you feel naked if you don't have that rebounding drill in every day or whatever it may be.
And, and all of a sudden it's 2 hours and 15 minutes. And like you said, you're like, oh, God, I can't take this out. So we're just going to go for 2:15, you know, and that'll be okay. And even though every resource you have as a coach is telling you, you shouldn't do that. And I don't know, maybe some people are smarter than I am and they're, you know, they're more adaptable, but I was just stubborn and just said, oh, we need to do that. And now, you know, what's an extra 20 minutes? It'll be just fine. And we'll be more prepared. And, but the feedback was consistent from several different kids. And again, I had time, so I even started texting some of the kids from 2019 that had graduated, or 2018, and they were all like, yeah, we always talk about a coach in the locker room, like, we're going too long, and why are we doing, you know, why are we running this set, you know, every day 5-on-0 that we knew back in December, and we're still running it in February 5-on-0, like, we got it, we're good. So I mean, one, I became much more cognizant of practice time. I mean, we are 2 hours max, you know, in November and December, and I've told my assistants that's a hard 2 hours. I mean, you got to come up and tell me if we're buttoned up against it, coach, we're done. Like, you know, we're, and then when we get past kind of the holiday break and into January, you know, we're trying to scale it back to 145 and then eventually to 130 as we get into February. I'm not good enough to get it much below, you know, 120, 130 yet. But we've eliminated anything over 2 hours. And we do a little bit of stuff 5-on-0, but not near as much as what we need to. And I've taken the kids' advice that, hey, after having ran this in December, we don't need to rep all of these out of bounds plays or these set plays 5-on-0 throughout January and February. We got it. If there's something new, obviously you got to rep that. But, you know, so I mean, we generally start our practices, you know, the skill stuff is important to us. You know, we think it's allowed us to compete against some teams that maybe physically a little bit longer, a little bit jump a little bit better, those types of things. So, you know, we do it all in the off season. So you got to continue to do it during the season. So our first 30 minutes of practice are going to be getting us loose, getting on the court. And we try to warm up to play basketball by playing basketball. You know, whether it's, you know, some ball handling or warm up shooting drills or, you know, those types of things. And then, once we're loose and we've warmed up and we've hit on a bunch of that skill stuff, we're going to jump right away into some sort of competitive drill to hopefully set the tone for practice. Most of the time that's going to be transition. Anybody who's watched us play knows we want to play fast. I mean, we are kind of our three game pillars. The first one is run. We want to be good in transition. And, you know, we've kind of got maybe 3 or 4 different transition drills, some 5-on-5, some 4-on-4. Some of it depends on numbers. If we've got the full varsity JV, or if we just have a varsity that day, or if we've got, you know, a sprained ankle or two, or an illness or two, but some sort of competitive transition drill that gets us competing, that gets us running up and down the floor. And, you know, one thing that's stuck with me, and I don't know who said it, but I've repeated it a million times, is, you know, practice the things that happen the most in the games. And I think it sounds super simple, but sometimes as coaches, we get away from that, you know, just practice the things that happen the most during the games. And then, two, if somebody comes, you know, if Marty Plum comes and watches the Westside boys practice in December or January, and Marty's, you know, dropping in for the first time and has never seen us play, but he's an educated basketball person, he should be able to tell me at the end of that practice, most days, what are the three pillars or three most important things in Westside basketball? Because if those things are the most important things, we probably, the practice should reflect that. So to us, those three things are: we want to run. We try to really emphasize being good in transition, our offensive flow, and then we try to be really disruptive defensively. And so that kind of breaks our segments in practice. So, we're going to work the skills. That's stuff that happens the most, right? Ball handling, passing, shooting, and finishing. And we're going to sprinkle those in throughout practice. You're going to see a transition segment that's going to be competitive. And then I try to vary it. Do we go to more of an offensive or defensive segment next? Some days it'll be a defensive segment. Some days it'll be an offensive segment. But we try as much as we can to use two-way teaching. I'm fortunate enough to have had very good assistants. So if I'm coaching the offense, my assistants are coaching the defense or vice versa in a lot of the stuff we do. So, we've had to really cut out the 5-on-0 stuff, try to teach through small-sided games, whether they be 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4s, and reinforce our concepts. And doing that way and kind of the reliance of small-sided games has helped us with our two-way coaching, and I generally do a lot of our offensive stuff, and my assistants, generally do a lot of the defensive stuff. But, when we're playing those small-sided games, it's the other thing we've tried to do is make our practices more competitive. So very rarely, maybe you'll see it in the postseason when our practices maybe are ratcheted down a little bit. Very rarely will you see our top five playing our second five. I mean, we try to divide our top eight into two teams for those small sided games. I mean, sure, we'll certainly play our top five together when we're doing some 5-on-5 segments and stuff like that. But in those small sided games, we try to make those teams very even and very competitive. And we try to put something on the line, in almost every drill we do. And in trying to shorten our practices, those small sided games, like you referenced jokingly, but it was true, like, oh, you can't leave that rebounding drill out. Well, before 2020, I had that 5 to 10 minute rebounding drill. Well, now if rebounding is a focus for that week or we haven't rebounded well, we just adjust the scoring in the small sided game to, if you don't rebound, if you don't box out, you're going to lose. An offensive rebound is a bonus point. And if you get a basket off of an offensive rebound, it's another bonus point. I mean, so now, if I make if I put a shot back in, that's a 2-point shot. I also get a point for the offensive rebound and a bonus point, second chance point. So now it's 4, so we don't have to do that rebounding drill, because if you don't box out, well, you're going to lose in that small sided game because of the scoring. If we are defensively, we used to spend a bunch of times on, okay, if we're playing Bellevue West and Bellevue West had 4 or 5 different guys last year make 8 threes in a game. Okay, we would spend time on closeouts. Now it's just in a small sided game. Okay, if the red team, red and black are two colored, if the red team makes a stationary catch and shoot 3, that's worth 4 points, because we're playing a really good 3-point shooting team. So, but I think that and making everything competitive has really transformed our practice. I felt really good. You don't always get compliments, right, in the coaching business, but we were playing Lincoln Southwest this year in the first week of the season. And I was talking to Alex Baugh, the coach at Southwest, before the game, and Mike Sauter, who most of your Nebraska listeners will know Mike as a kind of well-known basketball media personality in the state, does kind of an annual tour around the state and his practice reports. And Alex was telling me before the game, as we played Southwest, he said, hey, I want to tell you, you probably wouldn't hear this, but it's a nice compliment. Mike came to Southwest as like his second to last or his last practice report. He'd been at Westside a couple weeks ago, and Alex told me, he said, I just asked Mike, I said, hey, you've been to 10, 12, 15 practices. I'm just curious,
whose practices are the hardest, whose practices are the most competitive. And Alex told me that Mike had said West Side, and it's not close. And it was, and it's a great compliment to our kids that we had this year, because they are super competitive and they bond into, you know, kind of that competitive aspect of practice. But for me, it made me feel good, because I think, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when I got that feedback during COVID from some of our seniors, that would not have been the case. We didn't practice that hard. We put a lot of time into our practices, but the practice design wasn't great, and there was a lot of standing around, and quite honestly, they were bored at times, you know. So if, you know, in 2019 and 2020, the comment might have been West Side practices the longest, you know. So that, and I, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, like I told Alex, I mean, I, you know, I don't know if that's true that we every day practice the hardest. I guarantee you, Bellevue West, Millard North, Creighton Prep, Omaha Central, on and on, those teams practice really hard. Yeah. Maybe Mike happened to be there for a good day for us, but regardless, it showed that our guys compete really hard in practice. And I think, you know, I would encourage anybody who's trying to get more out of their practices, going to a two-way teaching model, trying to teach through small-sided games has been really, really beneficial for us in trying to improve our practices.
Great stuff, Jim. Great stuff. If folks want to know more about you, and want to know more about the Warriors, how do they find out?
I'm not great at social media. I do have a Twitter. My Twitter is, I think, at Jim Simons, JimSimons1, the number one, at JimSimons1. I know our Westside basketball Twitter is at Hoops Westside, one word, at Hoops Westside. I'm not good enough to have Instagram or any of those types of things. So, but you can find me certainly on Twitter. I love talking basketball. I love talking to coaches. You know, every time I talk to a coach, you know, I mean, both of us are hopefully benefiting from it and learning from it. So, you know, I think my DMs are open. I don't know. Elon's changed a few of the rules and things like that on Twitter or X, but love to hear from any coaches. If there's been a ton of coaches who have helped me, you know, over the last 23 years. And if any small way, I certainly won't be as much help to some of the coaches as some of the people that I've talked about today have been to me. But if in any small way, I can be of help to anybody, I love talking basketball.
Well, I appreciate you. You know, you did a great presentation at the clinic a couple weeks ago. Shameless plug, if you want to get Jim's video, it's $10 on, you know, just DM me or email me and we'll get it to you. Just really, really good stuff there with the shooting stuff. And appreciate everything that your support of a Pen and a Napkin over the years, Jim.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Marty. And thanks for what you're doing for coaches. I talked about how boring it was during those, you know, first couple months when COVID hit. And that was, you know, I think the first Pen and a Napkin, you know, I think it came out right around then, or you're just getting started. I know the first one I listened to was during, I didn't have anything else to do. And as I mentioned, Doug Woodard is a great friend and kind of a mentor. And I think you had him on, right? Kind of
around COVID. Yeah,
and I was like, oh, you know, I don't have much else to do other than kind of pour through these surveys of my players telling me how boring and bad our practices are. So I'll listen to Doug on this, you know, this goofy podcast and see what he has to say. And I've enjoyed the series and have learned a ton. I mean, you've had obviously tons of very accomplished guests on. And so I think what you're trying to do for coaches is great. And, you know, hopefully kind of, I know your plan is to keep building it and doing more things, which is awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Goofy is about the greatest compliment a pen and a napkin has ever gotten. I will run with that till the cows come home. So
I thought it was appropriate.
No, so. I mean, you know, it's we take this, and maybe this is the opposite of what you're supposed to do as a proprietor or whatever, an entrepreneur. We take this seriously. Lord knows I stared at my ceiling for how many nights over 28 years, especially when I was a head coach for 18 of them. But, you know, it is what it is. And we want to get better. We want to do everything that we can. We want to be as good as we can be at it. But at the same time, It's kind of like you said earlier. If all I've taught these kids is how to shoot a ball or how to do jump stops, then we've failed. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is just to keep that balance. And I know there's been times in my career where I struggled with the balance of it, that I took it more importantly than what I probably should have, which then led to, you know, not as good a result because, you know, you can squeeze it too tightly, like George with the rabbits in what's that Steinbeck novel or that Steinbeck story?
I know what you got two social studies teachers. We need
social studies
teachers here.
Talking literature here. So,
but I think you're totally right. I mean, and I think it's one of those other things that you hear a lot as a young coach, kind of like, you know, that your practices shouldn't be too long, but sometimes all of us, it's in one ear, out the other. And, you know, I think I've gained a much greater appreciation for, you know, at the end of the day, the tangible life skills you can teach these kids are so much more valuable than, you know, how to handle a ball or how to beat a 1-3-1 zone defense. Is we all love to win. It's a ton of fun. It's certainly from a coach's perspective, it beats that feeling after winning the game, certainly beats the feeling after losing the game and keeps you up a lot longer. But I think the more all of us do that, like you said, if, you know, if we can use the game to teach those tangible life skills, we feel so much better about it also, you know. That was, yeah. You know, for me, it was, I don't know if it good is the right word, but, you know, you referenced, we lost a really tough state semifinal game this year. You know, I mean, 2 points in overtime, a million different things that could happen. I think 10 years ago in my career, I mean, that might have, I don't know how I would have handled that. And I was, obviously, it was a tough, tough loss. But to me, it was easier to get over because of two things. One, our kids, they couldn't have played any harder. They played as hard as they possibly could have played, which is all you could ask. And two, you always say when you get to the end, you want to, you know, the locker room afterwards tells you how much it meant to the kids. And, you know, our kids were distraught, and it was hard to see them in so much pain. And they didn't want to take their jersey off. And I think we might still be in that locker room if the fine folks at PBA didn't kind of gently encourage us to get moving along. But it showed me how much the kids cared and how much they put into it. And, you know, in kind of a weird way, it allowed me to kind of get over what was a really tough loss, because I knew they put everything in that they had, you know, and, you know, as you always hear and say, kids are super resilient. I mean, that was on Friday night, and by Monday at school, I mean, yeah, they wish we'd won too, and so does everybody, but they were in a good place mentally and knew that they, yeah, could have made a shot here or there or made a different decision on a 3-on-2 break, but they knew they'd put everything into it, and they'd gone through something they were really proud about with some guys that they're connected with for life now. And at the end of the day, I think if all of us can say we were a small part in that, that'll make us feel good.
Yep. Well, hey, we'll catch up later here. Appreciate you, Jim. Just hold on a second here. Again, Jim Simons, head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside. Want to thank him. Want to thank Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review. Give us 5 stars. Say good things about a pen and a napkin. That'd be great. The self-described goofy basketball podcast here. So email me if you have questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas. apenandanapkin@gmail.com. For Jim Simons, really appreciate his time this Saturday morning. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.